Hi, and welcome to the RPG Academy Show and Tell. Show and Tell is a show where we like to bring on someone in the RPG space doing something cool and talk about it. I'm Mo, and today we're talking to Alexander Markiannis, designer of the TTRPG Existential Essential.
Yeah, man. So like you said, I'm Alexander Markiannis. I made this company called Momo Die, just trademarked it. It's pretty awesome. We're just trying to create amazing games. And one of them is Existential Essential, as mentioned prior. Existential Essential is basically a cyberpunk meets cosmic horror tabletop role-playing game. And what's pretty awesome about it is it has a comedic twist. And people usually will say, wait a minute, you just said cyberpunk and cosmic horror. What the heck are you talking? What does that mean if you say comedic in the midst of that? And let me tell you, it works, baby. It works. So it's all about having as much fun and have as many cool moments as possible. This game has a focal point on just having a blast. I've never seen before people have their characters pass away, like just get blown to bits, and they're laughing. So you know you did something right when you go for a comedic, dark humor game like this, and everybody at the table is cracking up at their own character death. So that is kind of like our staple for this game, Existential Essential, is just having as much fun as possible in a genre that you usually would try to take uber serious.
There we go. I like it.
Yeah.
Sometimes we play games to have fun and not to be uber serious. So that's awesome. I want to talk about Existential Essential more, but before we get into that, how'd you get into game design?
Yeah, so game design in general, the way I got into it was I had a friend, and he always told me, he said, one day I'm going to have you on my local podcast because I know you're going to create a game. And I told him, no, man, I just do homebrews, I GM. I don't really, you know if that's the thing for me, right? And eventually, unfortunately, my dear friend, he passes away. I just remember him telling me that he believed in me and he would be honored to have me on that podcast. So I said, you know what? This one's for you, brother. So I went ahead and I said, I'm going to put all the stuff that I knew how to do beforehand, you know, all my writing skills from prior GMing, all of the books that I've read in the past. And I took the thing that was core to him, which was comedy, and I put that in something else he loved, which was the cosmic horror aspect. So I put those things together and I formulated this game basically for him. And I'm just very thankful to him as well as my father. My pops is a gamer and GMer for since the dawn of D&D, baby. So he knows exactly what you're talking about when you say chainmail or first edition D&D. And so with those skill sets combined of just prior knowledge of GMing, playing games, even being a play tester for actual published works already, I've taken that knowledge and I said, I'm going to go for this. And so I put everything in this, man. I've written this, I've edited it, I've illustrated it. And I think that's what it takes to be a game designer, is to put forth that effort and have a goal in mind. Say, I'm doing this for this reason. Not for the money or anything like that. Anybody could try to make money. But when you're trying to innovate, when you're trying to get people excited about something, I think you have to believe in that something, right? So that's the case for me. That's why I think I'm a game designer now. I was probably questioning myself in the midst of making the game sometimes. Am I a game designer? And as I'm making all these stats and calculating probabilities and all stuff like that, I question myself sometimes. And then the end result, when you have those play testers and all of them are having a blast at the table and said, this game's amazing, it competes with other great games out there, that's when I knew. I was like, we're onto something here. I am a game designer and I'm proud of it. Yeah,
that's awesome, man. Condolences for your friend. Yeah, sadly I've been gaming myself for going on more than a couple decades, and one of the consequences is some of the people you have these ephemeral moments with, they leave the mortal coil.
Yes.
What kind of experiences are people going to have playing Existential Essential?
I'm so glad you asked that question, man, because like I said, Existential Essential is all about moments and experiences, man. Mm-hmm. It's literally the entire system is made about just, can you have fun right now? You know, instead of waiting for fun, can you have an awesome moment right now? And so everything, including when you start making your character and you're saying, hey, look, it, you don't have to calculate gold. You don't have to calculate currency. It's literally just pick six of your favorite equipment pieces in the book that stand out to you and fit within your character class, and you can wield them. There's no level requirements or anything like that. Nothing like this. You customize your character as you see fit. So it's already encouraging you and saying, hey, no, you're not limited. Have a fun time. How do you envision your character? Jump in here and have a blast. And the game is lethal. So there was something that I was hesitant about originally, which was, how lethal should I make this game? And what I realized is the more lethal I made the game, the more people went in with the expectation of, you know what? This isn't just about the longevity of my character. This is about the character's legacy. Right, let me do something cool in the moment. Let me have a fun time. Let me do the sickest, you know, like the most bad butt thing you could think of in this moment, you know? And I've just seen people do the most off the walls thing, you know, saying like, you know what? I'm going to use one of my shoes to rocket jump me up to the ceiling. And then the other shoe is going to like be this magnet that attaches to the ceiling. And then I'm going to start lighting people up from the ceiling. You know, they're just customizing everything, and everything overlaps with everything. So that means that if you see these different abilities, they go together always for equipment, for abilities. Like I said, the game is all about you having fun now. This is not something that you have to wait until you hit level 5 or level 10 to be cool. You're cool now. You're silly also now, but you're cool now. Even the experience system is about that, man. It's, you get an experience point in the middle, right after you finish a combat, you spend that experience point immediately. So it's all about just boom, boom, go, go, go.
Nice. It sounds like it's kinetic. Sounds like it's energetic. I'm always curious, what kind of controls, what kind of choices do the players have when they're entering the game? Like, what kind of, you say the choice, the characters can choose any items in the book to add to their character. Like, tell me a little bit about character creation.
So I'm so glad you brought this, because one cool thing about this is the character customization is probably, you know, the thing I pride myself on most for the system, right? Mm-hmm. So the character customization is all about you choosing one of 9 different classes, and they're unique. They're not like, here's a fighter, here's a wizard, right? These are just weird, bizarre classes. Like, I don't know if we could mention like drugs on this podcast or not, but basically you have a character who's like Magneto only when he takes drugs. So they're all like, and every character has like a specific thing like that. It's like, you're awesome if this happens. You're awesome if this happens. Mm-hmm. And every single one of them has that thing that they just shine in. And then once you choose one of those 9 classes, you just get handed experience points to spend. So you're not here as like a template that automatically makes you the same as everyone else. You ever played like Dungeons and Dragons?
Yep.
Not that I don't love Dungeons and Dragons. I love Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. But you ever played like Dungeons and Dragons and you felt like, well, at level 1 through 5, I'm basically the same as anyone else who picks my class.
Right.
That will never happen in this game, because you just get experience points and you spend it how you see fit in the very beginning of the game, between skills, traits, which are basically like abilities and feats. Mm-hmm. And then also, like I said, you get to customize with 6 equipment pieces of your choice. Nice. And it's just, it's off the wall customization. It is, everything has a cool effect to it. There's no such thing as, here's a dagger, it does a little bit of damage, and then here's a rapier that does a lot of damage. It's like, why am I not going for the rapier?
Right.
That doesn't exist in this game. Every single equipment piece does something awesome, and it always stacks with something else. So yeah, that's kind of how the character creation goes. It's just class, spend your experience points how you see fit, 6 equipment pieces, please jump in the game and have a blast. That's it, man.
So I'm getting this feeling that you got these characters that are like super evocative, super interesting, super amazing. And you got this like drive it like a stolen mentality to
yes.
the role-playing approach, you know. What kind of tools are you giving the GM who, you know, is maybe a little stodgy, maybe a little traditional, to kind of control all the madness that happens in this particular game?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah. So basically, we actually have a whole section dedicated toward the back of the book. So you mm-hmm. don't have to buy a separate like Dungeon Master's Guide, if you will. Right. You can literally just, it's all in the core rule book, and the very back, a GM help, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it gives you those examples of like, hey, GM, this is a crazy world, right? It's cyberpunk corporation stuff mm-hmm. going on and everything. The universe is ending, you know, and humanity's morale is dropped, and everyone's wearing these virtual reality headsets, you know, because they don't want to deal with reality. You don't. That's why you're called an existential essential. So that being said, it gives you this guidance that says, well, with all of that taken into consideration, here are some cool ground rules. And it makes things super simple for the GM. Let me give you just one example, as even though I know it's better to probably not talk too much about the specificity in regards to system. But one cool thing is the game uses different polyhedral dice for your stats, right? So you roll like a D4 through a D12 on your different stats. But the enemies all roll one type of die. So mm-hmm. depending on how difficult the challenge would be. So it's very easy for a GM to come in and say, okay, I know a D4 enemy is the trash of the trash, right? That's the worst. Well, that's the minion, if you will, right? Then a D6 goes up higher. That's closer to like what a henchman is. And you get closer to like a boss with a D10. So it tries to simplify everything for you as a GM. So you can say, hey, look, toss these NPCs in there. Don't let the system get in the way of your awesome GMing. Allow everything to move in narratively. And here you go, just one die across all the stats. Something simple like that. So like I said, there are a bunch of little tips and tricks like that in the game. But then there's also a slew of NPCs mm-hmm. that have unique, cool abilities. And everything there in the game is called a rumor. The reason why I call them rumors, or rumors from the abyss, sometimes they say mm-hmm, in the book, mm-hmm. it's because the whole point is anything here is malleable for the GM. Gotcha. Anything here does not have to be used with specificity. If you find in your table that does not work for you, something that's mentioned in the book, you can say, well, that was just a rumor. That's not how it is in my game. Everything's tied into the theme. I really wanted to make sure even the rules and the leniency or the strictness of the rules, everything is tied into the theme of the game. So, because those are my favorite types of games that have a theme that you can remember, right? Mm-hmm, anytime mm-hmm. you think of like Star Wars, for example, you're like, all right, you know, space odyssey, you know, sci fantasy kind of stuff going on. And you have this theme of lightsabers, force users, cowboys in space. Right. So making sure you tie everything to a theme, I think, is so important, unless you're doing an agnostic game, right? If you're doing like an agnostic genre. But this game is very much so theme based. So hopefully I answered your question there.
Yeah. No, like, listen, I think, yeah, especially when people come from the player side, they a lot of people say the players could do this, the players could do that, players could do this. And it's like, have you given the GM proper fencing to keep all of this kind of corralled? Not so that to limit the players, but actually to kind of expand the fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, because I got an example too, if you want to hear one, of something cool. One of them is called the IOU. So like I said before, I got rid of a currency system, like weight and currency, because mm-hmm. one thing is like, if you ever played these other role-playing games, they'll say, hey, your character can carry this much weight, and you have to calculate every single little weight. Like, well, technically I could carry 30 greatswords. No, you can't, right?
And that's the rule that most people just ignore anyway.
They ignore it because it doesn't make any sense, right? You're like, that's stupid. I don't want that in my game. So what I did was I said, I'm going to make this a slot-based system. So you almost get a video gamey feel where you're just like, my head is an equipment slot. You know, my arm is an equipment slot. So, and it's broken up into sections in the book. The book has a 2-page spread throughout the entire game saying you never have to look beyond 2 pages for any one subject matter.
Right.
So for a class, 2 pages, et cetera. So that being said, I simplified this and I said, well, if the corporate syndicate, which is basically the one corporation that exists and took over the entire universe, right? Mm-hmm. If they own everything, that means they give everything to everybody for free, basically as amenities, because they own everyone already, right? So I was like, so they don't need to make more money. They have all the money that exists. They have everything that's necessary. So I said, you know what? To encourage players to go out and adventure, instead of trying to penny pinch and see, oh, I can't do something cool because I don't have enough. I just said, there's something called the IOU system. And it means the only way to get anything in this universe is to find an agent who has wares and do something for them. It's not a price you pay like monetarily.
Right.
You have to do a favor for them and then you get one of their wares. So an IOU is one mission you do for someone and then you get one wear.
There you go.
It's a one-on-one ratio. So it cuts out the whole, like, let me just see if I could like pig farm on the side and see if I could, you know, get enough money, whatever. It's like, no. Enjoy the game. Go on missions, you know, encourage you to progress the story forward, to have fun and not be focusing on these things that sometimes slow the pace down, especially for a cyberpunk cosmic horror game, you know? So it's always encouraging the players to move forward, which helps the GM, right? Because ultimately, now the GM doesn't have to say, oh man, I was really hoping they had enough money to do this. And I would have like, now I got to come up with something on the side to make
right.
So like I said, double. Yeah.
I love that because essentially you are encouraging and inviting the players to kind of integrate with the world. And yes. To me, that's awesome. I'm hearing a lot of NPCs. I'm hearing a lot of like minions. Are there creatures in this game?
That's an interesting question. So the answer to that from a meta standpoint, so this is the interesting part about this game too. It doesn't hide anything from anyone because it's comedic, right? It's like, you're going to expect this, but your character might not, right?
Right.
So there is actually the sad part about this and why the morale is dropped is, there's no such thing as like life anymore, except for humanity. So that's a really sad existence, right? It's a really sad. So everything's synthetic. So if you see a dog, it's synthetic. If you see a tree, it's synthetic. You know, air itself is synthetic. So people are like breathing in things like air that doesn't work properly most of the time. Because it's like I said, it's just like a really sad universe. And that's what makes it funny is that everybody's like, this sucks. Like, I wouldn't want to live here. Let's make this better. Let's do something that improves the universe, right? So that being said, yeah, there's no other creatures with the exception, and this is where the game gets cosmic horror, of Eldritch horrors.
Gotcha.
So the reason you might have heard me before say that the universe is actually ending, I actually tied in the scientific knowledge that we currently have, which is that the universe is ever expanding, right?
Right.
And then part of that same theory is that eventually it's going to stop expanding and then it's going to start imploding on itself, right?
Gotcha.
And it's going to implode at a faster rate than it expanded. So that's where this game starts, where the universe is imploding now. It's not no longer expanding, it's descending, right? And that being said, I tied that in with the cosmic horror where Azathoth, the dreamer god that supposedly we're all a part of his dream, he wakes up, and so the universe is ending. And this is where humanity starts learning about cosmic horror creatures. They start learning about Eldritch horrors and all these maddening things that's things that are uprising from the ground and the earth, and some people even try to resort to like cult,
following
that, just that way they could get rid of the insanity that is the current universe. So yeah. So is there other life? Technically, yes. Is it life that you're hoping to meet? No.
It's not quite a dragon you're gonna go kill.
Yeah, it's not that it kind of makes it interesting though, because you know, a lot of games do focus on those tropes, and I love those games. You know,
I'm a huge fan
of Lord of the Rings, right? Who doesn't love a dragon? But it's nice to have that refreshing, weird creature that the GM can come up with and say, this is you can't even understand the creature that's in front of you right now.
Right.
It's so hideous and odd and whatever. And it's like I said, it's refreshing to encounter that instead of saying it's another goblin, you know, and you already know how a goblin acts. However, you don't know what a 70-eyed, you know, three-headed, you know, creature with four tentacle arms is going to do to you, right? And so it brings another aspect of entertainment in the game where everyone gets freaked out, but they also laugh at it because it's so obnoxious and bizarre.
Well, the air is fake. The dogs are fake. Cthulhu's coming. How does this game mechanically support the humor?
So,
you said this was a funny game.
Yeah. So everything in it is making fun of the characters. It's making fun of the universe. So I'll give you an instance of what's humorous about it, right? So I'll give you one small thing here, which is there's a character class called basically regulators, right? The regulators. Mm-hmm. You can think of them almost like a Judge Dredd kind of class, right? It's kind of like the enforcer. Now you can play as this. It's one of the classes.
Right.
It's also the NPCs that are around. And you might be saying, wow, that's a lot of power for a PC to have, you know, like being part of the enforcement team. Well, the way regulators work here is that regulators, they make up the law because there were so many laws and policies that the corporate syndicate couldn't take, like, they couldn't take note of it. They couldn't remember all of them.
The bureaucrats couldn't manage the bureaucracy.
Yeah, so they said, you regulators, you make up the law for your own sectors or whatever, right? So what happens is you make up the law as you go along. And if you come across another regulator and that regulator disagrees with your law, whoever wins at a battle and destroys the other is now the lawmaker for that district until they're challenged. So it's just funny things like that where it's poking fun. It's very cynical, satirical. You know, it's like I said, the game is not meant to be taken seriously. Now, that being said, I don't want people to think, well, does that mean I can never have a cool, serious moment? No, we've had some of the coolest, most serious, and some people even like had tears at certain parts because of how invested they get with their characters or the world and what have you. Because some of it truly is tragic, and you can play on that as a GM.
Right.
You customize how much of the comedy you want. You customize how much of the cosmic horror and cyberpunk. We played an entire couple sessions where there was no cosmic horror whatsoever. It was all cyberpunk. We also did the opposite and said, let's play cosmic horror and no cyberpunk. And then we played one where it's like, no comedy. This is only serious, cool sci-fi noir characters about. You determine, and the game has enough material in it to actually allow you to make that decision as a GM. How far do you want to take everything, right? You and your players get to decide that along the way.
Nice, man. I dig it.
Thank you.
If people want to learn more about the game, do you have like set up like any APs or quick starts or anything they can get access to?
So unfortunately, I currently do not. That being said, I would love to work on that. We're going to have the Kickstarter come out May 1st. And so we're prepping so that way we can come up with something like that, a quick start of some sort. Currently, right now, to be honest, we were kind of just giving PDF files to people and stuff and saying, hey, look, if you really enjoy this, you'll buy it later. If you don't, then it's just a PDF sitting in your file. I'm hoping people love the game enough that they say, hey, I would like to support this because I want to see more of it, right? I want to see how far this can go. So currently, like I said, as it stands, no, but I am willing, because this is the cool part about being indie, I'm willing to speak with anybody, respond to any emails, just like I did with you guys. I'm willing and ready to interact with anybody because I have that time. I have that time I'll put aside for people because I believe they are important. They are me, right? So when I'm buying somebody else's game, when I'm playtesting someone else's game, they're my fellow people. I'm a gamer at heart, right?
Nice.
So I'll be there for anybody who wants to reach out, you know, my through email or Facebook or Instagram and stuff. I guess, I don't know if we're going to post it on later or what have you, or if I should mention them, but definitely
you can mention them and we'll also have them in the show notes. So,
Okay. Yeah. So it's just going to be at momo.games in pretty much every single social media you could think of, at momo.games. And that's going to be TikTok. That's going to be Facebook. That's going to be Instagram, all of that. And yeah, like I said, hit us up. We'll answer anything. And if you want our email address, we will always respond. We have a team of people who are playtesters who love the project so much. They said, we're going to help you respond to people. We're going to help you send reviews out and stuff like that. So that being said, you can hit us up at momodigames@gmail.com. Momodi is going to be momodigames@gmail.com. And yeah, we look forward to hearing from all of you guys, man. This has been a phenomenal experience going through the game design process, man. It's made me a better person, admittedly. I know it sounds silly, but because you're probably like, games, entertainment, how does that make you a better person? But it really builds character, I feel. You know, the diligence, tenacity, you know.
I think community building, interacting with people, creating spaces for empathy and sympathy.
Yes.
Sadly, I think the game space is growing and exploding so much. My personal opinion is because it's becoming a lost art. You know,
yes.
Folks ain't going to church. Folks aren't joining the Boy Scouts. You know, folks are not wanting to drive home drunk anymore. And just creating spaces to see people and be seen. You know, like I think games might save the world. That's an exaggeration, but like they are definitely doing a thing for a lot of people. And that's why I host this show, and I think it's important.
I agree 1000%. As a matter of fact, like I don't know how far in depth I could go in this, and I guess this is the beauty of us talking about this beforehand. The friend who I lost, I don't think we would have lost him if he, because this was during the pandemic, like the beginning stage of the pandemic. I don't think we would have lost him if he had these type of groups, if he had a reason, an excuse to get together with everyone, because everyone was so separate during that time. It was a lot for him, and he was a veteran, you know, so just trying to deal with a lot of those serious issues, you know, that comes with being a veteran and what have you. So I think you're exactly right. In a weird way, we're kind of, you know, we're part of saving the world here by saying, here's a reason for you to get together with your friends and family.
Yep.
Here's a reason for you to go hang out with somebody and say, how are you doing, man? You know, before the game even starts, how have you been? You know, let's pull out some chips, some pizza, and drink some soda, and man, we need this. We need this, and not
talk about politics, and not talk about religion, and not talk about work.
Oh, please, yes, especially the last part.
yeah, it's a thing. How can listeners support you? I heard you mention a Kickstarter.
We're currently in pre-launch phase. So if you go over to we actually have it. I guess I put the link afterward because it's a long link. Mm-hmm. But if you guys can, anyone listening who finds that this is interesting, go ahead and hit up the Notify Me on Launch on that link that we're about to post down there to follow Existential Essential. Because what I'm getting a lot of is a lot of people are like, yeah, I'm buying the game. Lots of coworkers and stuff, and lots of people, they don't have a Kickstarter account. So we're not seeing those numbers really rise up. But then I'm seeing a lot of followers on all these other social media platforms, like 300 people here and stuff like that. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, we need to pull that all the way to Kickstarter now. So so if we can, go ahead. And we would love your support because, like I said, this game is about bringing people together. It's about fun. And I think we need more of that in this world. And I think it's a pretty unique setting too. So if you want something different than slaying your dragon that you've done the 30,000 times by now, go ahead and support us, man. And I'd love to talk more about this one-on-one with each and every one of you. So yeah, and
you're smart because what the listener of the podcast isn't gonna see is that you actually held up the book You know, like some people, you know, they start this whole process and they're like, yeah, give me some money so I can finish. And like you actually have a product that is in some finished state that could change, you know, but, you know, you actually have a game that people could play. And I think that's awesome.
You said that because right now the current state it's in is not only is there the hardcover book that we're going to be sending to people and what have you, there's also going to be miniatures. So this is like an official game, people, right. I'm talking about, all right?
Right,
this
right.
is going to be, you know, it's not just PDF. We got the PDF. We got the hardcover. We got hand-sculpted miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty awesome looking to replicate the odd illustrations. I don't know if you got to see any of the illustrations in the book, but they're mm-hmm. really weird and wonky and what have you. And it's just, it's based off of all those cool characters. And we're really trying to make this as authentically qualitative as possible.
Right.
Because what I really care about most, even when I am working, I know we said we're not going to talk about work, but one thing that I love above all else is if I have great quality. Because speed comes with time always, right? That can take time. But quality is something that that I'm attracted to. And I feel like most people are attracted. I think that's why we're in a phase right now where the OSR, you know, old school mm-hmm. renaissance mm-hmm. is making a rise, you know. Mm-hmm. It's because people are kind of like, they're kind of tired of the mundanity, right?
Right.
Fantasy
has gotten boring.
It's just sad because it's an amazing genre, you know. You should never say, you know, I'm bored. Well,
I wouldn't say that it's not an amazing genre. I think we've definitely gotten into some, you know, and letting one party define what fantasy is, you know, we've created a lot of limitations.
Yeah, I've and the other thing about I'm so glad you mentioned that because when I think about that one party determining everything, it's also not even what it originally was, you know? And I think that's why people are going back to OSR and stuff like that. And I think you need everything. I think that's why mm-hmm. the indie scene's on the move right now. It's because people are like, what else?
Right.
What else? Right. You're not offering anything new, you know, it's the big companies. And I love them. Like I said, I've played them ever since second edition, you know, all the way to now. So I got nothing but love in my heart for them. But there is this cry for the people saying we want something new. We want something, even if it's something old that's new again, you know. Mm-hmm, I mean, mm-hmm. there's a reason why people are wearing bell bottoms again. You know, who would have thought that would have came back? It's true. You know, sometimes you just want to mix it up, man. You don't want a monopoly on everything, right? You don't want that one person, one company dictating what the entire world should look like in regards to an entire genre. So keep making things, people. And I'm proud of you, Mo, for making your own game too, because like I said, we need that. We need that right now, especially a reason to get together and play something new and fun and have a blast with it. So,
I agree. I think we could talk a lot longer. This is getting deep, so I might need a cocktail. But thank you for coming on the podcast, Alexander. So great to talk to you. So great to hear about Existential Essential. And good luck with the Kickstarter.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank you so much for having me. You guys have a blessed rest of the day, right? Anyone listening to you, man, thank you so much. This has been an honor. I can't wait to hear from everyone. And stay beautiful, man. Stay beautiful.
I like that. Everybody stay beautiful.
Thanks for listening to the RPG Academy podcast. We do this show out of love for the hobby and the desire to be ambassadors, welcoming more people into this community. All of our website content will always be free to use and utilize. But there are expenses related to the show. And if you enjoy what we do here, then please consider supporting us in some way. You can do so as simply as rating or reviewing us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. If you're going to purchase anything through Amazon or DriveThruRPG, consider using our affiliate links first, and then we'll get a small percentage sent back to us. You can do a single direct donation through PayPal using the paypal.me/the RPG Academy, or consider joining our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/the RPG Academy. And for a donation as low as $1 a month, you'll get access to lots of extra goodies, including bonus minisodes, invites to monthly one-shot games, one-sheet adventures, and more. Please consider following us on Twitter and Facebook, or join our Discord, where we like to try to keep the conversation going with our fans as best we can, and are always looking to talk and chat more. Or do none of that. Just continue to listen and enjoy our show, because honestly, that's enough. Thanks, and remember, if you're having fun, you're doing it right. We'll see you next time. The music used for our intro and outro is Fly a Kite by Spectacular Sound Productions, used under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.